Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I'm so excited to be speaking with Ashley, who's in China, and I've been following her for so many years and that now on LinkedIn and seeing all the exciting stuff that's sort of happening within China. So Ashley, really good to see you.
Fantastic to see you, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Look, it's so good. As I said, you've been in China now for quite a few years. Give us a little bit of a backstory first about how you came to be in China and all that, as well as a Westerner, I guess. So,
indeed. So I was born in the Russian Far East, in a place called Vladivostok, which borders on the mainland China border, Korea, and also Japan. So Asian by birth, I could say.
Right.
And I studied abroad since early on. And when I was 17, I came to mainland China and studied business and economics. That was the beginning of a beautiful journey, because back then, the whole world, but China in particular, was undergoing a huge transformation when it comes to the digital commerce transformation, right? After SARS, a lot of people in China were actually using social, not social media back then, we didn't have social media, but they used e-commerce platforms to purchase products. And in the West, we were still at a stage where Amazon was promising investors that sometime 20 years down the road, we're going to make money. But meanwhile, we're selling books and kind of losing money. And that's okay. In China, there was actual business happening online. And that was also the time between 2005 and 2010, when a lot of social media platforms popped up globally. So we had Facebook in China, we had Google in China, but at the same time, we also had Zhenzhen and many different versions of Weibo, yeah, microblogging platforms. And later on in 2009, WeChat came about, and all that was just building up. So it was a fascinating time and very digital, and a lot of businesses started moving towards social commerce, e-commerce, blended commerce. And yes, that's how I got completely fascinated, not only you know, by this industry and country and culture, and it all came about.
Yeah, no, I think I was really excited at the same time as you as well, because in the early 2000s, I was fortunate to be in China for family reasons. And I also got to meet Jack Ma and Alibaba, and in sort of 2002, 2003, and he came to an event when he was in England, in Henley in 2004. And I was so excited, as you said, by seeing all this exciting stuff that Alibaba and that was doing, and say the social media. And I also felt China was a real internet stuff. You know, it wasn't just putting adverts and that out there, the whole platforms and all of that, and how it's changed over the years. We've seen so much. So look, I want to dive.
Implementing at scale, you know, it's not just about the emerging technology, it's about implementation at scale, just like with digital payments or, you know, QR codes or, as I said, e-commerce or live streaming, not new necessarily, but implementing it at scale and succeeding and seeing what works, what doesn't. It's, I think it's quite fascinating, and very few countries can do that.
So let's dive into one of those examples. As you said, in the mid 2000s or whatever, when I was traveling there, I was seeing on my mobile phone this QR payments type stuff. So I think to relate a story of seeing something that was happening in, you know, when did QR code start? And that, now remind me when QR code started with WeChat and Alipay.
It was many years ago. I will have to Google to know when exactly. It was definitely a few years back.
It was like sort of 15 years ago, sort of something like that. I think was sort of putting it into a sort of perspective. But you know, we didn't know what QR codes was and that on our phones, and over a 2 or 3 Chinese New Years, wasn't it, the payment system, they started doing payments and that from phone to phone with QR codes and being able to scan QR codes. And then that exploded. And now there's over 1 billion people just doing mobile finance. And this is going back many years ago.
Yeah. So when it comes to QR codes, actually, again, they are not new technology. I don't know the dates exactly, but I know that they were actually invented by a Japanese company, not Chinese. And they were invented in the 90s, so not even 2000s, not 15 years ago. But then at one point, because again, maybe it's because of the characters here in Asia, it's just easier to scan rather than type, the Latin transcript of the website or wherever you want to go. You just scan, and basically you're being directed to a page or checkout page or payment or whatever that is. So QR codes were not new, but implementing them at scale was something that China has done, as you've just now mentioned, at scale about 10 years, 15 years ago. Indeed, WeChat, when WeChat launched the WeChat Pay, which was not very successful at first, right? Nobody really trusted an internet company to keep their wallet. They essentially ran a campaign. It was a campaign to promote Chinese New Year's red pockets, right? And red pockets, red envelopes are the little, literally envelopes with money inside. Yeah, that across the world, Asian cultures, right? Lunar New Year, they basically exchange, and it's specifically very popular in China. So they said, okay, we can't really go and see all of our friends, all of our relatives all the time, right? But this New Year, you can actually deliver them cash through these virtual red envelopes. And people love the idea. So millions and billions, I don't know how much, but a lot of money was actually transacted through this period. So the campaign was extremely successful. And after you received the money, right? Imagine like all your friends and family members gave you the money. You wanted to spend it, right? It doesn't just sit on your wallet. You need to spend it, and you could spend through WeChat Pay. So it was a very smart idea to use it as an occasion and to promote. And from there on, that was it. China pretty much leaped from bank accounts to mobile payments. We never really had a stage of credit cards. Some people, of course, have debit cards for company purposes or whatever other purposes, for sure. But when it comes to day-to-day payments, I just came back from Shanghai a week ago, and it was quite funny. One of our colleagues, he saw me carrying cash, and I just brought it in case. Obviously, I have mobile payments and all that, but just in case. And it was literally attached to my phone, at the back of my phone, with a little clip. And he looked at it and he said, for 8 years, I have not seen a physical RMB. I have not held a physical RMB note, banknote in my hands. And it was hilarious.
No, I've sort of seen that, and I co-founded a fashion, ladies' fashion retail business, and we right from the start 5 years ago, we put QR codes up for each of the designer brands so that the customers could interact and find out about those brands. And going back 5 years ago, it was like people in the stores in London were going, what's that? How do we use it? And we had to train the store staff. We had to train the customers. And of course, thanks to COVID now, everyone in the UK is now using QR codes because to scan in and scan out of some locations and sort of stuff like that,
Yep.
QR codes. So now that's sort of come about. So I think I wanted to illustrate that to for people that w watching and listening, that this is sort of an example where China has sort of been ahead. Now, I would like to sort of, you've done some fantastic on your LinkedIn. I particularly follow you, watching what you talk about virtual reality and augmented reality on things that are happening sort of within China. Could you give us a bit of a flavor about how that is sort of normal now and how it's sort of being used every day by people?
Well, just like in the rest of the world, the whole AR and VR or metaverse or extended reality, blended reality, whatever call it, hype actually come in waves. So in China, we also had the first wave of basically a hype wave. It came in 2016 and 2017. That was the time when, again, Mark Zuckerberg was talking about this phenomenal new industry, and everybody was very excited about what's to come. Then it kind of died down. And then, of course, in 2022, that's where Meta was announced again. Mark Zuckerberg made it happen. And China and the rest of the world were extremely excited about this prospect of metaverse being built and already implemented very, very fast. But of course, right now we're in 2023 and we know that that hype is kind of also dying down. What I wanted to say is that extended reality, a blended reality, is the future. It is going to come. It is going to happen. But it's not likely going to happen, or is not yet happening to that extent that some people hoped for. And it's just going to take a while. So with China today, while it is definitely a strategic direction for the government, and hence the municipal governments and large tech companies and smaller brands and consumers, yeah, that's how it goes down. They align themselves with this kind of goal and direction. Mostly what has happened so far is that the value chain, the supply chain of those VR or AR products have been streamlined in 2022, meaning a lot of companies have actually invested in various startups and hardware, software, etc. When it comes to implementation, we have a lot of implementation in the country compared to other countries around the world when it comes to medical, when it comes to education, when it comes to experiences, for example, concerts, rave parties, expos, etc., and of course, games. But games, of course, were also regulated quite harshly in the past 3 years in the country. So while some reports say that by 2026, I believe, AR and VR industry in China will hit $13 billion, and that's considered a big kind of number. It's going to be the second largest in the world. In reality, the output today is rather small and primarily experimental. But when we see it, it's very, very cool, right? So we had in the medical field, we have many doctors basically being trained through this extended reality. Some of the surgeries, including some complicated surgeries, brain surgeries, heart surgeries, they were already performed on a distance. When it comes to education, also, we have quite a lot of obviously construction in the country as well, and a lot of manufacturing. So, safety, especially when it comes to safety training, that happens quite a lot already. When it comes to experiences, especially during the pandemic, concerts, expos, even the big China Canton Fair was digital, so you could interact with other guests. You could, take pictures with your favorite artist. So it was not just a virtual room. It wasn't a Zoom meeting. It was actually kind of a virtual space. But right now, since the opening half a year ago, people want to connect offline, and these virtual experiences are definitely going down
Right.
compared to last year. And of course, when it comes to games, just a few months ago, we have had our games ban on publishing the new games release. So this space is definitely going to develop, but again, it will take time. So I am excited when it comes to China. China is aligned when it comes to getting AI, getting this extended reality metaverse or whatever forward. It is in the national plan, in the 5-year plan, and they're gonna very likely get it done. One thing that I wanted to mention, apart from the fact that it's going to take some time, is that the approach towards building those extended reality scenarios is also very different, because in the West, we very often focus on a scenario, or let's, a brand plays with their audience, or a scenario is, let's say, educational or whatever other. In China right now, a lot of focus goes into cloning offline spaces. So you create a clone of Shanghai, and then in the clone of Shanghai, you have opportunity for people to work, to entertain themselves, to shop, to interact, etc., etc. And I think that's a little bit different. And very often, for example, right now we have we work with a couple of developers in the country, and many developers, before thinking about a new apartment building or department store or an office space, they think, what and how am I going to integrate for this extended reality space? Yeah, how the lobby is going to be a different lobby, how I need different rooms, how I need different experiential kind of fun OMO, online merging offline spaces, which is very different. And I think in the West, we haven't arrived at the stage yet. We are still kind of thinking, okay, when it comes, and then I will build infrastructure for it. In China, they know it's going to happen, so they start building infrastructure for it, both in a form of virtual city clones and in a form of hardware, infrastructure.
And just picking up one point that you made there, the 5-year plans and that within China. I've taken countless executives to China, and they've gone wowed by, things like electric vehicles, things like the infrastructure. And so these senior executives that are running major projects and radio, I guess I say, have you read the 5-year plans? They said no. And then when they read it and go back and look at previous 5-year plans and see what stuff around sustainability, see about the plans for electric vehicles, see about the artificial intelligence sort of things, it's all there public. Just go and get the English versions and that of it. I think it's so important for people to sort of see some of that strategic thinking that's sort of coming. Now, areas I'd like to touch on, and you pick which one maybe you want to pick on. Drones, I've seen them being the displays in the skies going back a few years ago, and we're now seeing that with the King's coronation, autonomous shops, autonomous vehicles. What's the state of play on some of those exciting things that are coming through? What sort of things should you think we should be watching out for now that are happening in that within China and going to explode because of that scale and that development that's happening on hardware and software in China?
Right. So, when it comes to the latest 5-year plan, the focus is very clearly, and as you said, they are super important. If you want to understand where China is going, it's not a secret. Every 5 years, they tell you, this is where I'm going. That's what I'm gonna aim at. And for the past, actually, if I'm not mistaken, 55 years, they have achieved every single milestone that was announced. So if they commit to it, they actually hit it. So it's not a surprise. It's not a shock. Right now, China is focusing on modernizing agriculture, modernizing science and technology. And when it comes to technology, a lot of it is advanced technology, such as AI, such as so building nice algorithms and training them on high quality data. Number two, supercomputers. Definitely, there's a lot of focus, especially in the central China area. For example, in Chengdu, Chongqing, there are institutes that are building these nanocomputers that are going to be fast and extremely smart and enable a lot of calculations and, of course, advancement. Of course, with the current geopolitical situation, there's also other things such as, semiconductors and whatever else to enable all that high-tech hardware to actually be produced. But building, for example, metaverses or extended reality is a big focus. Enabling, when it comes to this agriculture, China is also right now focusing quite a lot on eliminating digital illiteracy, which is previously, right, we were talking about eliminating poverty. So China has officially announced that they succeeded at eradicating poverty at that international kind of committed level. And right now they talk about eradicating digital illiteracy, meaning doesn't matter whether you live in a tiny little village, doesn't matter whether you are, 30 years old or 95 years old, but you shall be able to, order yourself food and potentially put your house on sale online and somehow participate in this digital world. So this is what China focuses on. When it comes to some of the technology that you are mentioning, definitely smart cities or even super smart cities are a big part of it. Companies such as Huawei, they are not consumer companies. They are B2B companies. They're infrastructure companies. They work with, building together with China Mobile and other research institutes, the future of 6G. So 6G will officially launch in China. That was also announced in commercially launch in the country in 2030. Already last year, we had tests with 6G speed done, and they were successful. They lasted a few seconds, but they were successful. So once 6G is enabled, it's a completely different world. It's like with 4G, it takes, I do not know, 3.5 hours to go from point A to point B. And with 5G, it's 7 minutes. But with 6G, it's going to be a few seconds. a few seconds. So the
I'd be happy to get 4G or 3G signals in London sometime.
that...
And I think probably China is in the lead again in being the world's largest implementer
Yes, but when
of
it comes to
5G.
5G, it is. And it's very important to understand that, because such innovation, as you mentioned, autonomous vehicles or drones or all these cool, whatever cool technology that you have, it will not work if you don't have
Yeah, good point.
infrastructure right.
Yeah,
It
thanks.
will not be connected. You will not build a super smart city that connects hospitals and traffic and autonomous vehicles and whatever things, if you don't have that infrastructure right. And China gets it. And that is why in the country there are those test cities, the cities that test a certain technology. For example, when it comes to the future of mobility, the future of green mobility, that's where Shenzhen and a couple of other places are definitely ahead of the game. You arrive in Shenzhen, for example, you cross the border from Hong Kong, and suddenly you hear nothing. You stand next to a busy road, busy junction, and it's nothing. Why? Because 100% public traffic is electric, and there's a lot of autonomous vehicles running around. It's quiet. It's very, very different. So when it comes to digital RMB, for example, same thing. First, there were 15 cities. Then they expanded to 30 plus cities. They tested how will this digital national currency work. And then they expanded to the whole country. So at this moment, a lot of focus goes into building that infrastructure to make sure 6G is there, speed is there, and we are able to connect all the different elements of the digital world together, including your, for example, digital identity. Some people may like it or not, but you have a passport. In the physical world, you have just one identity. I am Ashley. I'm not Andrew. I cannot go online and say that I'm Andrew. So at one point, there will be, one kind of digital avatar and identity. There will be a digital clone of Shanghai or Shenzhen or Hong Kong or anything else in order to optimize processes, make sure that everything runs smoothly, that drones can react, autonomous vehicles can go, et cetera, et cetera. This is still a while away, not too far away, and I'm quite excited to see, this happening in the country rather soon. So going back to what's happening right now with drones, they are already officially in the commercial fleet when it comes to, for example, deliveries. So you can in Shenzhen deliver your meal to your neighborhood via a drone, and this is going to be 15 minutes. It's going to take around 15 minutes. Then you go down to a little booth or kiosk and you pick up your delivery. Not just food, it can be any delivery. The delivery also happens quite a lot in the mountainous areas, villages, but then of course it's bigger commercial drones that just deliver produce. And when there were some disasters, China sometimes has flooding, etc., then obviously there are those delivery drones that help with relief efforts. Drones are used quite a bit when it comes to the shows, so any kind of concerts,
Yeah, those are
marketing
amazing.
promotion.
Some of the
Yeah,
pictures you've shown of those are just amazing. The one you had the acrobat
so
doing the somersaults between the skyscrapers and all of that was just like, wow.
yes, and it's they are more environmentally friendly than fireworks. They look impressive. I cannot judge more impressive or less impressive. I think it's a
Just
it's a
different.
taste thing.
Yeah.
It's just different, but they are definitely very very cool. And of course, at the end of the show, you see a QR code and you can scan that QR code in the sky
Oh,
and
yeah.
get a promotion or go to a page or register. And this is fun. This is really fun. So yeah, this is where China is right now. When it comes to the deliveries, actually Meituan and mentioned in Shenzhen has already made it kind of official, and they have made more than 100,000 deliveries in the first couple of months of 2022. They already have officially 18 residential compounds in Shenzhen that operate through this model. And right now, they're going to be expanding it in Shenzhen. They're going to be expanding it into other cities in the country. When it comes to autonomous shops and vehicles, we have on the roads, for example, in Hangzhou, we have buses, autonomous buses. In Chongqing, we have autonomous buses. In some places, Nearby to Beijing, we have taxis that take you between certain neighborhoods, completely autonomous from place A to place B. In most of the campuses today, when we talk about university campus, all the delivery is done by autonomous little vehicles that basically bring parcels to the students. That's done for security reasons as well, so that all these delivery gentlemen and ladies are not in and out of the closed compound. So that is already happening. When it comes to shops, there's a lot of autonomous ice cream shops, noodle shops. There's even restaurants where you come in and you scan everything with a QR code, you place an order, and you just wait for the food to come, and then the robot comes in to, clean the table. So even that happens. But of course, as I said, we are really going to see the real impact of all that coming together the moment we have infrastructure. And China is implementing already at scale, but once the infrastructure is done, that's when you want to see the future, you go to China.
So you touched there about electric vehicles and it being so quiet in sort of Shenzhen. The last time I was in China was about 4 or 5 years ago now. I did multiple trips on that there, and one of them was in Shenzhen, seeing BYD taxis. So tens of thousands of taxis on the road there, all electric, and visiting the electric recharge car parks, 180 taxis, 100 kilowatt sort of chargers, and say this is going back. And there were dozens of those locations, and that within Shenzhen. We're starting to see some of the Chinese brands like NIO coming out now. I was really impressed by the NIO vehicles, and they're now available in Germany and Norway and that. Could you give us some insight in some of the Chinese brands that you think now are going to start coming out of China that we might sort of see?
So Chinese brands are definitely going abroad. There are some fears when it comes to especially technology brands, because if you asked me a few years ago, and I would probably say that the brands that are going to go out most and first are going to be, brands like NIO, Xiaomi, Huawei, and others, right? Where they can really bring high quality electronic goods and devices to people. But right now, due to the fear and geopolitics and the generally very negative narrative in the West, of course, this is not happening to that extent. They are still going abroad. I mean, travel to Mexico, travel to Southeast Asia, travel to, well, before the ban, India, right? Of course, these are, I mean, Africa, right? Travel to these markets and you will see a completely different picture. But if we talk about expanding internationally more to the West, then these are not the first countries that are considering due to all these complications. The second bucket that I would put a Chinese brand for export to are the technology and technology companies such as, e-commerce giants, Alibaba, our Kuaishou. Right now we have Temu, right? We have ByteDance with their TikTok and other platforms. But again, are they going abroad? Absolutely. Are they considering the West as the stepping stone to expanding into the world? Some do, like TikTok, like Temu. Some don't. Some say, you know what? I'm not interested in going to the West. The population is really small. The regulations are tight. I'm being, treated a certain way because I'm a Chinese company. So I'd rather, eye some other markets. So that happens quite a lot. And then, of course, then there's the third batch of Chinese brands. They are all sort of consumer brands, less sensitive, be it Pop Mart or the famous restaurant chains or ice cream chains or even, Shein, for example, right? So Shein is not present in China, but they sell goods manufactured in China based on an algorithm. So somebody like that who just has a clothing brand or toy brand or ice cream brand, they are considered less threatening, even though in some countries they're still, they're still very sensitive about it. But in general, these brands go out. And this year we saw quite a bit of excitement in F&B sector, where a number of coffee brands, for example, Manor Coffee, it's a chain like a Starbucks, when a couple of tea brands and ice cream, for example, brands also went out already in 2022, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Pop Mart, right? These little toys also expanded globally, and they go into places like Singapore, they go into places like Korea. They also open up, of course, in the West. And then there is probably the last bucket when it comes to export, and that bucket goes into cultural export, right? And this soft culture exporting the movies, the comics, the books, the whole cultural ideas and thoughts. And of course, it's very, very difficult right now. But for example, IT, such platforms as IT, right, which is like Chinese YouTube plus Netflix plus everything else, they have a very strong presence in Southeast Asia, and they manufacture unique content for Southeast Asia. If some of you are familiar with, for example, Thailand, and it's a huge market. There's a lot of fan economy there, and IT specifically produce BL dramas. BL means boys love. Dramas which are not really produced for mainland China market, they're purely produced for Southeast Asian market, very successful in Thailand, right? So there's definitely cultural exports through movies, through series, and China has become so good at producing them. Obviously, not yet at the Korean level and international level, but getting there very, very fast compared to, let's say, 10 or 20 years ago, when the gap was just so big, and the quality of acting and the quality of, you know, setup and the quality of directing and shooting and storyline. Right now, it's really going very, very fast. I always joke that one of China's strongest cultural experts today is Jackson Wang. So of course there's also a couple of famous singers that are international and loved in the West or in other parts of the world outside of China. So yeah, China is going global, not without trouble, but we're going to see more and more of it.
Yeah, no, I think you may raise an excellent point. Again, when I've taken executives to China, they said, "Oh, we haven't seen China. Oh, they won't compete in our market." And I'm going, "Yes, but they don't want to compete in this very difficult, not growing as fast market in Europe or the United States. They want to be in South America. They want to be in Africa. They want to be in Asia, and that's where the growing markets are, and that's where they're being welcomed for bringing their technologies and their brands, which are fantastic quality and at a very competitive sort of price." So I think, you know, I think that's an important point. And as you said, you know, China is at the lead in using these new technologies, electric vehicles or augmented realities, payment systems and sort of stuff like that, that's making the world sort of a lot more efficient. So Ashley, it's been fantastic in that talking through with you. Been great to hear about what you do in that within China and all the excitement we've both gotten that for the technologies and the markets and the people and that there. So really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And it's so lovely to sort of see you. And people, I'm going to put the link, your LinkedIn connection and that, so people can connect with you or see the great things and that you do and can follow what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It was a delight.
Please give a 5-star like and follow for future interviews.